not going to as much as touch his finger of this lady.
What makes you say
you're
that?
Not a comedian. That's it.
You said you're we're married. He brings her her tea. She's
how do you know?
Her money. That's it.
Possible. This may be true. This may be true, but Rabbi Yitzchak Baruch Sheshet is not going to give that argument. But he will give a number of other arguments. Let's see his arguments. Okay. So first of all, and now I've admitted to you, you don't have the whole text in front of you. I've got the rest of the text, but I want us to see the first part of the text first, and then we'll move on to the rest of the text. Tshuva, the answer. Mi she'ein lo banim, ein lo lisa isha ela bat banim. Umi she'yesh lo banim, ukvar kiyem mitzvat pirya verivya, nose isha apalpi she'ina bat banim. A man who has not produced any children, has not fulfilled the mitzvah of pirya verivya, should only marry a woman who is capable of giving birth. That's the halacha. A man who is already fulfilled, as Rabbi Kelman said before, if a man's already fulfilled the mitzvah of Pirya Barivya, and then he wants to marry a woman who is not capable of having children, fine, that's not a problem. No say, Shah Pal Pishay Napapanim Kididnan, Lo Yvatel Adami Pirya Barivya, Elam Kenyesh Lobanim, Beshamay Omrim Shnei Zacharim, Bet Hillel Omrim Zachar Unkeva, Dichtiv Zachar Unkeva Bara Otam. So there's a discussion in the Gemara of what it means to fulfill the mitzvah of Pirya Barivya. Vamrinam Bagmara. This is 8 now. Vamrinam Bagmara. De'ein lo banim nose isha bat banim. Yesh lo banim nose isha delav bat banim. So the Gemara says it reaches precisely this conclusion that it is only a man who has already fulfilled the mitzvah of procreating who is allowed to marry another woman who is not capable of producing children for him. V'chein heim divrei Rambam. 9. V'chein heim divrei Rambam sal. This is what the Rambam said. V'zeh l'shono. Lo yisa adam akara uzekena va'aylonit uktana she'ena re'uya lele. The Rambam categorizes together 4 different kinds of women who should not be pardon me?
The status of the information on birth control, because even though she can have kids,
right. That's right. You can't marry a woman who is too young to have children. You can't marry a woman who is too old to have children. And you can't marry a woman who is barren or a woman, an Ilonit and an Akara. I don't have to go into the details, the differences between them, but they're both different kinds of barrenness that they're not going to succeed in having children. Ela im kein kiyem mitzvat pirya v'rivya, o shaitalo isha acheret lifrot v'lerbot mimena ad kan. The Rambam said, you're not allowed to marry a man. Could only marry a woman like this if he either has fulfilled the mitzvah of Pirya Verivya, or if we're living in a polygamous society and he has the possibility of having another wife, and so if he has another wife with whom he can be procreating, then he could also marry this woman with whom he would not be able to procreate. It seems that, yes, no, it doesn't seem the potential is good enough. He has to have it because we're concerned that, you know, God forbid, they might fall in love with each other and just be, you know, want to have an exclusive kind of relationship or something. So it's only if he already has that other wife. You know, even in the days where polygamy was allowed in halacha, it was so rare. And I think that it is because, pardon me if I'm a romantic, but I think that it is possible that men and women may have still felt this exclusive kind of feeling about each other in a mutual kind of way, and that a man who had a wife who he was with for many years was not, it wasn't all that common. It's also a financial difficulty having more than one wife, but I think that it also, it's an emotional, you know, splitting your emotions between various wives, even in the days that it was...
Permission.
Pardon me?
If you had one wife, you could not marry another wife without her permission.
Very good.
Really?
Okay, 10. Uvadai, she imlo kiyem mitzvat pirya verivya, ve ein lo isha acheret ruya levanim, uvalisa isha sheina bat banim, shurat hadin shebetin monin oto milisa ena. That's, as Rabbi Kelman said, bivadai. There's no question. As Rabbi Kelman said, there's no question here. Of course, you stop him, you tell him you can't marry this this woman. Vivadai, that's the way you do it. Shari Shanino. And he goes on with more sources. The Mishnah says, 11. Nasai Shavishatai Mo Eser Shanim Beloi Alad. I see there's a Rav Yitzchak Bar Rav Shesha that Rabbi Jake Hellman think the same way, making the same analogy to the case here of the man and woman who had been married for 10 years and had no children. Eino Rashai Libatel. It says in the Mishnah, the man cannot say, well, this is the lot that has been dealt with me in life. I'm not going to have any children. He can't say, I'm patur from piriya v'rivya. I'm patur from the mitzvah of procreating. I have to do it. Braita tanya, yotzi v'yitzen k'tuvan. The Braita says further that we tell this guy that he should divorce this woman, pay her her ketubah, and marry another woman.
Why does he have to divorce her?
It's 14th century already.
Right. So in the days of, it really is a question why they don't suggest that he should just marry another woman. I think even in Talmudic times it was so unusual for somebody to be married to more than one woman, and it wasn't a solution that most people could afford financially, and it wasn't a solution that most people could afford emotionally.
Ubik tuvot asikna de kofin or tov de shotim. They wanted to be together without the presence of another woman. But in other words, the issue isn't that you just have to divorce the first one. The issue is that they didn't want.
It's possible that it means that. Ubik tuvot asikna de gemarang tuvot says kofin or tov de shotim lehotzi. You whip the guy until he agrees to divorce this wife. He doesn't want to divorce the wife. He loves her. He wants to stay with her. You bring the whips out and you whip him.
Is what the Gemara. Her that she's capable of having children, maybe she had children. And we know that it's him.
That would be
in a situation. My understanding is, first of all, the Gemara does understand that sometimes infertility is the fault, the source of the infertility is the man. They do understand that. However, the tests available to prove that the source of the infertility were not all as available in those days. Not to go into too many details, they didn't have a way of easily coming. Now you gave a good example here. So a woman who's had children from another husband and he dies or something, then this man marries her and they're producing no children, so that's an interesting. In a situation like that, it might be different. But you're going to see, we don't have to ask too many of these questions because we have to get to the end of at the end of the text. If some of these questions remain at the end of the text, then I'd be happy to deal with them. But I don't think they're going to remain when we get to the end of the text. Okay, please. Adoption is really a modern kind of thing, and there was no such concept as adoption until Rabbi Felder, Zichrono Livracha, the late Rabbi Felder, wrote a wonderful book about adoption. But I think that he would have admitted that, you know, the sources that he was using were, you know, stretching patterns that didn't really exist beforehand into a new kind of. I actually recently was involved a little. They weren't turning to me as the posek, thank God, to decide that there was a situation, a man that I casually knew, not here in Tehran, passed away, and he and his wife had had no children naturally, but they had adopted a child, and the question was whether the wife required chalitza from. I'm very friendly with the brother-in-law, and he turned to me and he said, "Am I supposed to be performing chalitza for my sister-in-law because she has one child, but she didn't give birth to that child?" And now, as I said, I didn't have to be the one who decided because the late brother and the sister-in-law live in a rather Haredi kind of community, and they've got their rabbis there, and they weren't really interested in Marty Lakshin's opinion about whether they should have. But I think that she needs chalitza. You agree, Rabbi Kalb? Yes. It seems an open and shut case. But on the other hand, the personal side of it, of turning to this woman who has this grown son who's a kolonik off somewhere, and saying to her, "You've never had a kid. You have to go through," you know, the personal side of it. My friend, the brother-in-law, the cholates, the potential cholates, knew that it was a tricky kind of situation here. So, you know, I fluffed it off and I said, talk to her rabbi in the city where they live. Don't drag me into this. He doesn't live in Toronto. They don't live, you know, there's a community. So that is that question. So the status of adoption is an interesting question.
There's a tshuva from Rav Shlomo Kugler, where he says, "Kol ha-malamed ben chavero kilo yelodo."
Right.
He says, "Oh, you makai peruvu."
Right. Interesting. Yes, Abe.
I would have thought that in the context of this lecture, you would do everything to avoid mentioning chavisa.
Yes. Okay. So we're in 11 here. So the Mishnah says you whip him, or the Gemara says you whip him if he doesn't want to divorce his wife. Afal pishnishnehem rotzim la'amod yachad. They want to be married. This is the end of 11. These two people want to be married. Beitin kofin oto lahotzia kedei shekayim mitzvat piryav rivgah b'acher. You force him to divorce her, so that he can perform the mitzvah piryah. Kol shekein huchzaka liot akara. Certainly, if the woman, if it's clear that this woman is, this is in a case where it's just for 10 years, they haven't had a baby. And I remember, you know, as Rabbi Kelman already told us, you know, these laws are not basically put into. I had a rebbe in yeshiva, and my ram in yeshiva who was married for more than 10 years to the same woman, and they did not have children, and then they had children after 15 years. So you know the fact that they haven't had children. The fact that people haven't had children for 10 years doesn't mean that they're not going to have children. It's still possible. It does happen that people's bodies change and people do have children. But certainly, you know, the flip side here is somebody's reached this age here. She's got a chazaka that it's impossible. She's 90 years old. She's not going to be having any children.
But that argument doesn't affect the original halacha. In other words, the fact that we have a different attitude today, that's fine for the people who had children after 15 years. But that argument does not affect the halacha. I'm saying the opposite. I don't care about the possibility. You reach the point of no return.
Right, that's what he said. That's right. That's right, the halacha. That's what he's saying.
Right. We play with it.
Right. Okay, let's go on. 13. Biskeina she'in la refuah she'mekevan she'pasak mimena ha'orach machmat zikna shuv ein la takana miderach hateva. It's clear we're dealing with this woman who's past menopause, many years past menopause. This obviously, there's a little, as my children might say, there's a little shout out here to the story of Abraham and Sarah. Yes, it's saying, you know, there's no possibility in a natural way of her giving. Yes, we do know. Yes, Rav Yitzchak Baruch Sheshet says, yes, I have read the book of Breishit. I know there's a story, a woman who has a baby at that age, but, you know, in.
Yes,
but we don't, you know, miracles are not a consideration when it comes to halachic deciding. And even if he did have children, we would say lechatchila, reading the Talmudic text, he ought to be marrying somebody who could produce more children. Why? The kaimalan ka Rabbi Yoshua, because we're posek halacha like Rabbi Yoshua, the amar, nasa isha b'yalduto, yisa isha b'ziknuto, holid banim b'yalduto, yolid banim b'ziknuto. If you had children when you're young, you should have more children when you're old. I bumped into, I think, somebody whom you all know last weekend, or many of you here know, Dr. Tibor Judah, the doctor who often comes to Torah Motion events, and, you know, he'd heard that I just became a grandfather, and he's a little older than I am, and he said, you know, I've got children who, I think he has a child who hasn't had a bar mitzvah yet. I think he said that to me, and he started quoting these gemaras. You know, I'm supporting you. You're supposed to have children. Even when you're old man like me, you're supposed to have children. Started quoting this to me. V'lezeh katav harambam zal v'zeh l'shono af al pishkiyem adam mitzvah piriyah v'rivyah harehu mitzuveh midivrei sofrim shelo yivatel mipiriyah v'rivyah kol zman shiyesh bo koach. As long as a man has the strength and the potential for producing children, he ought to be producing children. Shekol hamosif nefesh achad miYisrael ki'ilu bana olam. Adding another Jew to the world is building another world here. So this is... this is the commercial that he gives. So this is the halachic analysis of Rav Yitzchak for Rav Sheshet. But as I told you already, this isn't the entire tshuva. I'm ready to give out to you the rest of the tshuva, unless somebody wishes to comment before I give out the rest of the tshuva. Yes?
Just a side comment. The impression you get from all of this is that it's all a man's job and not a woman's job. But I certainly know that one opinion the Tosafists are that based on the Mishnah, that women are obliged to replace themselves. It's called Sheva.
Mm-hmm.
And it simply says that halacha doesn't bother with it,
mm-hmm.
but it is a serious mm-hmm. it is a serious consideration mm-hmm. that we may
right.
tell her the same.
Right. But this is not the issue that came before
no.
him. Here's the grounds that were being used here to tell him to refrain, not to marry this woman, were the considerations of Piriyah Berivya. Any other comments before we see Rav Yitzchak Rav Shesha's final word on the subject? Okay, so I'll give out the rest of this. It's a one sheet of paper coming around. It's double sided. You have the Hebrew on one side and the English on the other side. You can look at either side of the piece of paper. Yes.
With the milk and the meat, why can't he look at it that he is sympathetic to the pain of the mother? Because later on it says you should
very
not
nice.
Kill them.
Very
the
nice.
Day.
Very nice. Other people like Rashbam and other commentators have offered that explanation. That's not the. You see, you're looking for an explanation that is universal and eternal, and that doesn't change from time to time. And there is a tendency to prefer such explanations, but. My question here today was, are you allowed to give explanations that are time-bound and that are related to a specific historical circumstance in the way that Rambam did?
Rambam himself would not claim his reasons are exhausted.
Right. That's right.
Himself.
Right. Right. Okay, let's get back to Samuel and Salma here in Samuel Arama here in Tunis. What does Rav Yitzchak Rav Sheshet say? Number 16. Omnam, kol ze shurat hadin lefi hagmara. This is the strict letter of Talmudic law. Aval ma na'aseh, shelo ra'inu b'yameinu, v'lo shamanu mikama dorot beitin shenishkak lezeh. For a number of generations, nobody's been doing this. This law has fallen into disuse, benign neglect, is what has happened to this law, and we, Baruch Hashem, there's benign neglect of this law. Lakufu lahotzi biisha sheshatayim bala eser shanim v'lo yalda o sheizkena ba'afim ein lo banim. Have you ever heard of a court that actually does this? Says Rav Yitzchak Rav Sheshet, that actually tells a man, you know, it's the same principle. This business of telling a man and a woman who've been together for 10 years is telling a man that he's not allowed to marry somebody that he wants to marry. Well, he's saying that it is. He's claiming that it is. It's all based, the reason that you tell the guy to divorce his wife is because he has to fulfill the mitzvah of Piriyah Berivyah. So also, this guy, you're telling him that he has to fulfill the mitzvah of Piriyah Berivyah. Now, I am guessing that you are thinking to yourself that there are other reasons to oppose this union other than the mitzvah of Piriyah Berivyah, that the guy looks like a money grabber and...
You could put that aside by having her sign him
Mm-hmm. Maybe she doesn't have children. Maybe, but he's not going to suggest this. But he is going to deal with that issue. Let's give him a chance to deal with it. Umin hadin haya lebeitin lakuf oto ola hotia ola kachad aleha yisha bat banim. And in theory, anytime a couple is married for 10 years, I guess according to Talmudic law, we ought to be forcing him either to divorce her or to marry another wife. Vafilu im yesh lo kamaz charim adayin lo kiyim mitzvat pir yavar yuvya men lo zachar ben keivah kedi very beti lil kamosh kadav lamala. What happens if this couple have been married for 10 years and they have 8 boys but no daughters? Then maybe according to simple Talmudic law, we should force the guy to divorce her because he's not going to have a daughter from this relationship, or to marry another wife so that because he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pir Yavar Yivya by producing 8 boys. That's not, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pir Yavar Yivya if you have 8 sons or 8 daughters. You need one of each in order to fulfill the mitzvah. He says that's what technical halachic analysis would lead us to, but we don't do that. V'lachin, 18. He says, even though the Talmudic texts say that a man who marries a woman who has not yet reached the age of maturity, it's not allowed, we haven't seen that courts stop this from happening. And there's a long discussion of this in Professor Avram Grossman, perhaps the leading professor of medieval Jewish history alive today at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, recently wrote a book about women in medieval times called Chassidot Umordot. It has now been... Yes. Yeah. You see, I was wondering...
Piety and Rebellion is a medieval woman or something like that. It's available in English.
Uh-huh. Okay, because so I was wondering about the title, about how they were going to translate that title, because Chassidot can Chassidot and Mordot can be translated as pious women and rebellious women, and it can also be translated as pious rebellious women. Chassidot and Mordot, women who are both pious and rebellious at the same. I was, you know, when I was staring at the Hebrew title of the book, I was wondering what it was actually going to say. There's a long chapter about the various attitudes over the years about the ideal age for marriage. And although the Talmudic texts make it pretty clear that women under the age of 12, 13 should not be getting married, it seems to have been going on a lot in Jewish communities. And as shocking as that sounds to you, it was going on in society. That was the age in which people were getting married in European society while they were still kids. They were getting married off by their parents, and Jews were doing the same thing. We've never seen a court get involved in something like this, says Rav Yitzchak Bar Rav Sheshet of the 14th century. Even though the guy ought to be fulfilling the mitzvah of Pir Yavar Yivya and hasn't fulfilled it, and he's got this wife who isn't capable of having children. The same thing? Same principle. You might say it's not the identical principle because the underage bride is going to become of age, but the overage bride is never going to become of age. But still, the Rambam puts it into the same category. We've never seen a court stop a man from marrying an underage bride, so why should they stop him from marrying an overage bride, is his argument now. Yes.
Moreover, if he's fairly young and she's well into her 90s, she ain't going to be around.
She ain't going to be around, that, right? Yes, he doesn't say that, but you're absolutely right. Right.
Can do it 10 years from now.
That's right. Very good. Middle of the second line of 18. Afilu mi sheyesh lo banim ein lo lisaktan. And actually, the Gemara says that even if you have fulfilled the mitzvah period of your vow, you shouldn't be marrying an underage bride. Dahani denaspek tanot ma'akvinat ha-mashiach. The Gemara says that marriage between a man and an underage bride is the crime that causes the Mashiach not to come. He says, still, you know, look around in our society, we don't do that today. So, okay, so the first argument here is, we've never heard of courts getting involved. The Chen Amru, he's going to massage this point a little more. Chen Amru Asur L'Adam Shikaresh Bito Ad Shetigdal V'Tomar Bifloni Ani Rotze. The Gemara makes it very clear that wives have to be of the age of majority and have to be able to say that they are interested in and he said, we don't do that today. U'miyameinu lo ra'inu misha michabaze. And the rabbis are not complaining about this. So that goes back to what Rabbi Kelman said. The law is clear, but the behavior is also clear. V'chein bebat kohen o bat talmid chacham la'am ha'aretz, v'chein bat am ha'aretz le'talmid chacham. There are also rules in the Gemara that a bat kohen, the daughter of a kohen, is not allowed to marry an am ha'aretz. And a bat talmid chacham is not allowed to marry an am ha'aretz. A talmid chacham is not allowed to marry a bat am ha'aretz. The yeshiva that I went to in Merkaz Harav in Jerusalem, I'm told I did not become engaged while I was a yeshiva boy, but I am told that every yeshiva boy who went to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, our Rosh Yeshiva, the son of Rav Yitzchak Cook, went to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook and said, I am engaged. His first question was, Bat Talmid Chacham. What is she, a Bat Talmid Chacham? And there's apparently, I just found out that Benny Elon's wife just wrote a novel that is set at a fictional Yeshivat Merkaz Harav. I want to get a hold of this novel. And the issue is that somebody in the yeshiva gets engaged to somebody who isn't a Bat Talmid Chacham, and the tensions in the yeshiva about the issue that people are telling me. Rabbi Yehuda Gilad told me about the novel. He said, "You have to read it. You were in Merkaz then in the 70s when Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook was saying this he was saying it seriously. He was saying it seriously. And, you know, he's not the only opinion on the subject. And he wanted his yeshiva boys to be marrying the daughters of Talmidei Chachamim. You know? Yes? Pardon me? Right? Yes? You know, this isn't the only opinion on the subject. You know, I married a wonderful woman whose father was the most wonderful person in the world. I could go on for hours of the praises of my father-in-law, but one thing that I can't say about him was that he was a Talmid Chacham. It would not be an accurate description of my father-in-law, and I feel like I'm a very blessed person to have been his son-in-law, even if he was. So it's not the only opinion, but it's amazing that somebody in the 1970s, 1980s was still doing this with his yeshiva boys, and Rav Yitzchak Bar Rav Sheshet in the 15th century in the 14th century is saying, pardon me,
it still goes on today.
Yes. That's right. So I don't know how. I was never at these private conversations between Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook and the guy who just got engaged. So all I knew is that everybody knew that if you went to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook and you said, I'm engaged, he would say, everybody knew that that would be the next question. I don't know what happened after that if you said no. I don't know what happened if you said no. V'lazeh. If we were to enforce these Talmudic laws, imagine what would happen if we were to try to enforce these Talmudic laws. You have to break up all of these marriages. And all sorts of older women who have never produced a boy and a girl as their children, they get divorced, and they would get their ketubah, they would get their nedunya. You know, the financial considerations here is the Gemara says that this woman gets divorced, and she gets her ketubah payment and she gets her nedunya back. She doesn't suffer any financial penalties. But think what would be going on in this society if all these marriages we were getting involved, breaking up all of these marriages, sending away all this money from the household that was in the household with these divorced women. The Leika Ketubah de Rabbi Vatigra, we know the Talmudic saying that there's never been a ketubah that people don't fight about it. We're going to go in there and start creating all these ketubah fights. You wanted to suggest this? The Tarbeh HaKtada VaHamrivan, it would only lead to fights. V'lezehe Elimu Chachmei Azorot Adeinehem V'inyanei HaZivugim Shalol Amanam. And that's why the rabbis don't get involved. The rabbis don't want to mix into situations like this because it's going to be making a terrible problem. I'm going to run a little bit. I want to try to finish this text, so I'm going to hold off on questions. I'll get to them. Ein tzarich lomar shelo lahafridam. Certainly, not only did the rabbis, the rabbis did not get involved to stop people from marrying each other, and certainly the rabbis didn't get involved to try to split up a marriage that already existed. Kol sheshneihem rotzim ve'im v'nisuim ha'em lo mishum erva v'lo mishum isur kedushah. As long as the couple actually want to get married, and it's not against either one of the rules of incest or the rules of kedushah, like a kohen, where if a kohen and a gerusha were to come to us, we wouldn't say, oh, they're in love with each other, we'll just let them marry. There are some rules that we enforce, but these other rules here, this category of rules, do not get enforced. V'day lahim ledunam al pi adin shesh machloket ben ish l'ishto al zev v'nikshu al mishpat u'shvatum al pi haTorah. It's enough, and this all rabbis know, it's enough that we have to deal with the couples who are not getting along with each other, and how much of a rabbi's time is dedicated to dealing with couples that are having marital difficulties. You are suggesting that we rabbis should get into the business of creating marital difficulties? Of going and trying to separate these? It's unthinkable that there'll be more time. There's this guy, the man and the woman want to be married to each other. We're going to try to break them up. God forbid. Okay.
So, what about God's law?
Right? What about God's law? Okay. Right.
These humans interact with things between men and women. Surely they were clear to God, and surely they were existing at the time.
It is not clear that the nature of marriage has stayed the same in the understanding of the average couple of what marriage is has stayed the same over the years. Again, I'll get back to that, but I want to finish the text because he has something else to say. Aside from the claim that Rabbi Kelman said in the beginning, right in the beginning, he said, of course the law is clear, and of course we don't enforce it. And he says that even in this case, we don't enforce, he's even willing to go to this old person, that we don't enforce these kinds of rules. But then he goes beyond, and that's what I really like about this, that he goes beyond the argument here of we don't enforce it. 23. V'lachein. Benidon shalifnechem yimazkena hahi nicha la delepok ala shema deishut. This woman wants to be married. She would like to be known as a married woman. That's why she is doing that. V'shiyeh la habaal bimkom bein. She doesn't have any children here in town to take care of her. She's 90 years old, and she wants somebody to take care of her. And that's why she wants to get married. And she found somebody who's willing to get married to her and to take care of her. Now, it's true he's got an ulterior motive, but this is a symbiotic relationship here. She has needs, and he has needs, and they would like to fulfill each other's needs. Sounds good to me. This is Rav Yitzchak Barav Sheshet. Chutra liyada, second line of 23 here. Chutra liyada umara likvura. A stick, she wants a stick to lean on, and she wants a shovel to bury her. Now, this is a Talmudic line. You have it at the bottom of the text here from the Talmud. Read 32. We don't have time to read 32. A woman came before Rav Nachman and said she wanted to get a divorce because she didn't have any children and she wanted to have children. For the context, that's what's happening there. So this woman came before Rav Nachman and says, I want to get married. I want to get divorced from this guy that I'm married to because I think that the reason that we're not having children is because of him, and I want to have children. Amar La, the end of 32 here, La Miskadat. But you don't have any mitzvah of piryavarivya. Men have the mitzvah of piryavarivya, women don't. Amra le la bayahach itata chutra liyada omar likura. But I want somebody to take care of me when I get old. It might not be a mitzvah, but I want to have children. You say that it's not a mitzvah d'oraita for me to have children, but I want to have a child for my own reasons. I'd like somebody who will take care of me when I'm old. I'd like somebody who will bury me when I die. Amar kiha vadai kafina. In a situation like this, we'll force your husband to give you a divorce so that you can go out and get married because you want to have children. I accept that desire to have a child. Now, Rav Yitzchak Rav Sheshet, who knew the Gemara much better than I know the Gemara, knows this phrase, and he knows that it's being used about a child. And he says, she wants to have a husband for that same purpose that the woman in the Gemara in Yevamot wanted to have a child. She wants to have a husband who will take care of her, who will help her walk when she can't walk anymore, when she needs a walker, and who will bury her when she's gone. And this guy is willing to do it. Second line of 23, middle of the line. Matzazeh sherotel yisa'ena mipnei dochko. And this guy, he's in financial straits. Now, it's true he's doing it for the money, but that means that he needs the money. He's got a need. He's got, here are two people's needs coming together. He's got a financial need. He doesn't have any money. She's got a need of somebody to take care of her. There's nobody to take care of her. What's the problem? Imein lo banim, im tirtzu lahalim enechem, kasher nahagu baharbe kilot gedolot v'tovot mle'ot chachamim v'anshei ma'aseh harshut b'yadchem. A proper reaction would be to do what rabbis have been doing for generations. Great rabbis have been doing it for generations. They have not been getting involved in situations like this, and it would be just fine if that's what you do too. The Kol Shekein, 24, Shehim Garim Ba'aretz Einam Mitoshvei Kehalchem. And certainly, Shehim Gerim Ba'aretz Einam Mitoshvei Kehalchem. They're foreigners here. So he realizes that there's some discrimination going on here against foreigners. There are two people here in the Kehillah who, neither of them maybe with the standard reasons for getting married, would like to get married for each other. One of them would like to get married because she'd like somebody to take care of her. And the guy would like to get married because he'd like some money. Those aren't the standard reasons that we hope for people getting married. But these guys are strangers in your community, and now you're coming out. You guys are coming out and you're dragging out the old laws that nobody has enforced for generations in order to discriminate against these strangers in your kehillah. How can you do something like this?
Maybe so, he simply means you're not under our jurisdiction. They're not under your jurisdiction?
No, I don't think he's saying that. Because in the end, it suggests to them the possibility you might have a reason for doing this. Vafim hu nosa l'shem mamon I know you're concerned about this financial business, that he's doing it for money, but it's not such a terrible thing. Omnam, now 26. Omnam, im tirtzu lachmir alav, v'liyot midat hadin hagamur mituha kenegdo mipnei shi'itiach dvarim keneged adayan uktzad mipnei ke'alchem lefi masher babi she'latchem harshut b'yadchem she'en lo l'adayan el masher'en avro'od. But I'm thinking that you might have another reason for wanting to be strict with this guy, and that is that he's broken the rules. He's gone outside of the community. And you guys are on the spot. I think this is also neat. All of these considerations, what do we see here? We see here that Yitzchak Rav Sheshet has brought in the woman's perspective, which is, you know, I think a beautiful kind of thing. He's thinking from the perspective, I don't know if any of us, when the first time that we read this question, thought about what does this woman want? And what, we just figured she's been taken advantage by this young guy who wants her money. But he's thinking to himself, maybe from the woman's perspective, this is, you know, if you ask her and you find out that this is what she wants, maybe this is good for her, and you shouldn't be stopping her from getting what is good for her. And maybe the guy's motives, although they're not the standard marriage motives, maybe they're okay too. Now, and you're dragging out old laws. So he suggests at the end that the halachic decision, see all these factors that go into this halachic decision here that's being made. As you know, so Rabbi Kalman said right away, it's an open shut case, there's no question about it, it's obvious, there's a clear halachic decision. But then on the other hand, we say they don't enforce these kinds of laws, but sometimes they are enforced, and they're going to be enforced depending on the rabbi's understanding of the needs of the community and the needs of the individual. This is a beautiful tshuva as far as I'm concerned, because it shows the rabbi's concerns for the needs of the individual, looking at what the man needs, looking at what the woman needs, and looking at what the community needs. And at the last second, he retreats, and he kind of says, I'm not there. You guys are there on the spot. I'm not there. You know what your community needs, but I've walked you through the text here. I just want you to know that this argument that you're giving, that this is what the halacha says has to be done, you've got a lot of wiggle room there, guys. And it's just fine for you to ignore. If you ignore it, you will be following in the traditions that have been the common traditions of the... Yes, Sam.
It's to me that what we see here, example of rabbinic flexibility in Sikat Halacha, by limited background, nevertheless, would seem to be an approach that has been followed throughout the ages. First of all, in this particular case, it's easier to do because, or to take the approach that you've commended, because it's not a question of actively creating a new law, but rather it's a matter of refraining from enforcing. That's very significant. So it's very easy to follow. It's much easier to follow that.
Right.
But a critical historical approach would be one in which you say, well, let's look at Talmudic law. Talmudic law requires, strict law requires divorce, etc. But let's consider the sociology of marriage at that time, and really it wasn't one, a relationship of love. I mean, I'm putting this on a hypothetical level. First of all, we say that ha'ish koneh ha'isha, the concept that originally there was a kinyan, the man actually acquired a wife. It was an economic quid pro quo in all of it. But today, our marriage is of a different, is more personal in nature. And therefore, the Talmudic law doesn't apply. Now, that's a radical way of approaching it. But rather, for whatever reasons, obviously it was felt that it would be difficult to apply it for whatever reasons. And the application of the law fell into disuse. But at no time was any rabbi ever articulated a radical statement of the sort that I put forward, and which is dangerous for a variety of reasons. A, that the halacha, as it is set out of the Talmud, doesn't apply today, because then it's the beginning of a slippery slope. And secondly, your analysis, or one's analysis, or the analysis I gave of the Talmudic halacha, could be wrong. And so therefore, there's something not articulated, but somehow it kind of grows organically, and so I see this more of a kind of more. I see this as kind of a normative approach, maybe following certain trends within halacha, rather than a historical critical approach, which is in the realm.
You see, I agree with most of what you're saying, but I think that there's an undertone here of the historical critical, and I would argue that. You're right that it rarely happens that the rabbis really actually stand up and say, this is what was going on in those days.
I'll give you an example.
I often give credit to our rabbi, Rabbi Rafael Marcus, for helping me quit smoking. Because about 21 years ago, he stood up just a week before Shavuos, and he gave an extremely learned analysis of the tshuvas about smoking on Yom Tov. And he said that the tshuvas about smoking on Yom Tov assumed that smoking was something good and good for your digestion. And that's the original heterim to smoke on Yom Tov were based on that assumption. And he said, and we know that that is not the case anymore. And, pardon me?
Never was. We know
that. It never was. That, yes, that we know that this halachic position was based on something that was incorrect. I don't think he put it quite as baldly as I'm putting it, but that's what he was saying, you know, that this was a mistake that people made. And that, now, of course, it's always easier to go in the machmir direction instead of going in the mekel direction to say, well, now we can do something. So, and the argument seemed quite telling. And, you know, the next day after Rabbi Marcus's Dvar Torah, Brian Mulrooney increased the taxes on a pack of cigarettes by about 50 cents. And I said, the combination of these two factors at the same time, I said, this time, so I haven't had a cigarette for 21 years now. I think that I'm clear from it, but you never really know with smoking whether you're clear from it. So even our rabbi at B'nai Torah is willing to stand up and say sometimes this was based on faulty understanding. Here's the reading us tshuvas and saying these are based on faulty understanding of what the facts are of the case. Now we understand the facts of the case differently. We have a different halacha.
No, I agree with that. It's just that I think that to put that analysis to halacha in the Talmud,
right?
That
yes, but I think that he's doing, you know, he isn't saying why we don't enforce these things. He's just saying they haven't been enforced, but he hasn't really, and he's kind of saying, we don't enforce this thing because, oy va voy, what would be my life like, a rabbi like, if I tried to, but I can't believe that that's the reason, that he's lazy as a rabbi. He doesn't want to get into conflict kinds of situations, and so I'll just avoid conflict and I won't enforce the laws. So I think that hiding behind this, it must be that he feels that there is a difference in what a marriage is in his society and in Talmudic society. And I'm not quite sure what that difference is. I think that, okay, well, I don't want to speculate. Go ahead.
I don't know if maybe it was there in the question, but shouldn't he have asked the question, was this woman who is at this advanced age of sound enough in my opinion to make a decision? That would be a reason not to allow him.
I was wondering also, but you know, it's so often that, particularly in medieval times, without telegrams, without emails, without telephones, you know, you'll get a piece of paper, takes months to get from North Africa to Spain, probably, and then you've got to come up with a decision, and you can't say, gee, I wish I had more facts about the case. Standardly, when somebody comes to a rabbi these days, you know, you always like the possibility. Pardon me? That's right. Yes.
Yes.
That's right. The fact that he published this tshuva is because he's trying to teach us something, and in the end, I love the end of the tshuva, although there's a certain retreat from the one might say the liberalness of the argumentation. But the retreat is throwing it back to communal authority, and that's also a great thing of throwing it back to communal authority. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point. Going back to 24. That's the way I think. His first point was, look, you can afford to overlook these people because it's not your prime responsibility. However, he says, despite that, there's an attack that was from these outsiders against you as a corporate entity, as a community, and for that reason, it becomes your business to deal with it.
I hear what you're saying. I don't really think so. I think the Jewish communities felt themselves responsible. The Jewish community authorities felt themselves responsible for the people who were not the original people there also. And, you know, the rabbinic authorities are supposed to be in charge of making sure that
the level is. No, right. They may have had a communal attitude, supposedly, mm-hmm. About how the people in their community should behave. Mm-hmm. Which may not, maybe beyond the din, right?
Maybe. But okay. I hear what you're saying. Yes, Brocha.
Okay. For people who want to leave, like,
right.
It's not fair.
Yes, right. I'm sorry. I'm going. Keep going about the time.
Yes. You can stay, but I just, those
Please, Brocha.
It seems like one of will follow this.
Yes.
However, I'm wondering about the Haredi people.
Right.
Whether they still follow it. And then I was thinking about the Lubavitcher icon who didn't have children, and yet
yes.
he stayed married to his wife until the end.
Well, of all the, I received a number of friendly and critical, I received also a number of unfriendly and critical, but I received a number of friendly and critical responses to that piece that I wrote in the Canadian Jewish News about modern Orthodoxy. One of my favorites, friendly and critical comments was, I don't think I can quote it in his name, I don't think he wrote it as a secret email, Naftali Winter, who said that the one thing that he didn't like about my article is that I called it modern Orthodoxy. He doesn't think that there's anything modern about this. He thinks that this is what has always been going on. Why are you calling this modern Orthodoxy? This is Orthodoxy. Other people have fallen off the pathway of what Orthodoxy used to be. But this is...
I'll put in a plug for Mark Shapiro's class online on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. You can watch online on your computer. So this week he's talking on Rav Kook, but the first two classes he spoke on German Orthodoxy. Since you're in an Orthodox society and a traditional type society, and Orthodoxy is self-defined. There's no such thing as Orthodoxy.
Right.
The man who wants to go at the 9 o'clock on your computer Wednesday night, Mark Shapiro, tell your wife he's very interested in Rav Kook, as they know. This Wednesday he's talking on Rav Kook. We'll see you all next Sunday and share your mind about Rav.
I know. I was thinking so there.
Yes. But he didn't articulate.